Keeper, Roy and Castells, Book 2, written by Joanna Gustafsson and read by Mark Meadows and Patricia Rodriguez.
Friday, the 30th of October, 2015, 11 a.m. He unbuttoned the jacket of his pale grey suit with careful deliberation, straightened his narrow tie, and sat down to face the judge. Sorry, Madam Justice. His eyes zeroed in on the heavy pearls dangling from her distended earlobes, as big as his thumb. His lawyer had advised him to wear a sober, dark suit. For the tie, something more classic, with a looser knot. Just a suggestion. He couldn't give a damn about the suit per se. It was having a choice in the matter that he found exciting. This was one sliver of power he could exploit to the hilt. Savor it right down to the bone. The judge started to speak. She shook her head, and her earrings swayed as if they were slow dancing, earlobes lolling like tongues. Lobes and mash, homemade style. Beat two egg yolks and dip the lobes in. Toss them in breadcrumbs. Fry them up in parsley butter. Drizzle them in olive oil and serve with mash. Lobes and mash. Homemade style. He leaned in to bring his mouth closer to the microphone and give Madam Justice an answer. Spelled out his surname. Paused to brush away a speck of dust from his left shoulder with the back of his hand. Carried on with his given name, date of birth, and profession, his mind dwelling on the curious habit he had of unbuttoning his suit jacket when he sat down. A fashion adopted by pupils at Eton, or, more accurately, those elected to the in-crowd of their exclusive pop club. Though perhaps this particular idiosyncrasy went all the way back to King Edward VII, whose fullness of figure demanded the extra space when His Majesty sat on his royal backside. The judge had just asked him to speak. She straightened the lace collar of her robe and shifted some files across her desk. Lobes and mash, homemade style. He coughed into his hand, appreciated the absence of handcuffs, reflected on how a cage would soon replace them. An image flashed across his mind, slotting into the space between himself and Madam Justice with her lolling earlobes. A vision of himself hanging from the bars of his cell like a monkey, still wearing his suit. He laughed. The sound of it echoed harshly back at him. Though he was laughing, he shivered as a thin film of sweat spread across the nape of his neck. "It's not my fault," he mumbled, as if to himself. "It's not my fault." The judge interrupted him. He couldn't make out the words, just the music of her speech. A crescendo building to a climax. A question. "It's not my fault," he continued. "Hilda was the one who started it. It all started with Hilda."